change your mind. Had you running back for seconds. Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hey!
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm so happy right now. It is summertime.
The sun is shining. It's warm outside.
I'm a different person. Making cameo appearances in London now? Like,
the whole week.
Doing everything
the
now.
The whole week. Mm. I'm like a new person. I like life, and I don't like people yet, but life is feeling better. I do not like people. That has not changed. So this week, I want to start us off with the fake news. I don't know. Migos, who we've talked about just recently when we talked about I Love Maconan's coming out, are in the news again for homophobia. But this time, it seems like it might not be true. Migos performed on Saturday Night Live with Katy Perry. And initial reports said that Migos refused to perform with a bunch of drag queens and had them kicked out. And then Katy Perry wasn't even allowed to ask them to come to the after party. Now, I will admit, when I heard that part of the story, I was like, that sounds a little off. Like, how Katy Perry gonna let somebody tell her who can come to the after party or not? Katy Perry been in the game for a minute. Migos, they brand new, basically. If you know.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, that's odd. But the story has just kind of gone out of proportion, basically, because everybody was using the same report, which was initially on World of Wonder and has since been deleted.
Ooh.
And in that...
That's their sign.
I'm going to go with this being fake news because Pink News and Advocate have both said that it's fake news. It's completely false, according to the reps of Katy Perry and Migos. But, like, honestly, Katy Perry, for whatever reason, I am not a Katy Perry fan. Ooh, surprise ya. Katy Perry was honored this year just with, she was awarded a Human Rights Campaign's National Equality Award for her LGBT advocacy work. She, in a speech to the audience, talked about her own sexual experiences with women. That's really annoying. That makes me feel like you're bi-curious. Like, I don't need to hear about your one or two or three, however many that you can count on your hand and remember, experiences with the same sex. And that makes you special. And also talked about her 2008 song, I Kissed a Girl, which I absolutely hated. I hated that song so much.
It was horrible. Yeah, she exploits and consumes whatever she comes in contact, whether it's queer culture or Black culture. But I'm going to roll back to something you said, which makes me feel like she's bi-curious. And what if she is? Like, tell me, break that down for people.
Why do I need to break down bi-curious?
I understand what bi-curious is, but why is it a problem that she would mention her one or two contacts?
Oh, right. Okay, well, I mean, for me, that's similar, you know, when people like, I'm not racist, I date Black people.
Oh,
right?
I feel.
So it's... And it's great. I appreciate people who explore their sexuality and don't take anything for granted and are open to, you know, doing whatever it is. But when I use the term, I'm not saying everyone uses it this way, but when I personally use the term bi-curious, I use it for those people who think it's something sensational. Ooh, let me be adventurous and do this thing that's naughty, that is, you know, not accepted by the mainstream, to show how rebellious, I don't know what else they think they might be. And then they do it. And it's not like they do it and then they figure out, oh, well, maybe that wasn't for me. It's more like they seek it out. They play around with it. And those of us who are actually bisexual wind up with this reputation that we are bi-curious. No one thinks that after they've gone around. I see I was mistaken, Cece. I do apologize. No, but seriously, I feel like if you just listen to the lyrics of I Kissed a Girl, you'll hear everything that I hate about people who often identify as bi-curious. I think it's something that tries to perpetuate the
idea
of being LGBT means, you know, it's by choice, right? Or you know, getting a tan and wanting all things Black except the oppression that goes along with it. That's what bi-curious means to me. So I'm not here for it.
She's wearing it like a badge of honor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like, hey, mom, look at this girl. I'm kissing her, you know?
Ooh, you're so shocked.
You don't know what's going to come from me. Or ooh, mom, look, my black partner. And so in the case of us black queer women, we get the double whammy. The double whammy of dealing with white queer women who are coming at us with this exoticism and thinking that choosing us as partners exonerates them from anything, right? They could do no wrong after that. But yeah, so Katy Perry is problematic and Migos is homophobic, but this story may not be true.
This story may not be true. And I think there's an interesting twist that I read on Pink News specifically that meant because you know, Katy Perry performed on Saturday Night Live, and on Saturday Night Live, there's typically two performances, and she performed Swish Swish, where drag queens were heavily featured, and then she performed Bon Appetit with a reduced number of queens, and the claim was that it was due to demands by Migos, but with apparently a little bit of investigation, it turns out that actually, if you look at the performance, there were only people of color at the table. And that was the reason that they chose to do it the way they did, because they only wanted to have people of color sitting at that table. You know, that sounds great at, you know, first glance. You think, oh, dope. They only wanted people of color, until you think about the fact that it's Katy Perry and she's no better than Miley Cyrus and loves to dress herself in blackness. So I'm actually not that thrilled about it, but it is an interesting explanation, and it, and especially in the context of it being ignored by media outlets who just wanted to run the story that Migos didn't want to have drag queens. So if that is really what went down, and one person, probably a non-POC, ran with the story, right, to have it published that they didn't want drag queens without taking any type of context into consideration, that would not surprise me at all. And, you know, would also be problematic, because this is going to be, you can't change the internet these days. This is always going to be there. And depending mm-hmm. on how far people check, they'll just see that, oh, Migos. And Countess Mascara went Dangerous. On Facebook to even say, don't believe everything you read. And Jesse Javia was in exclamation points, y'all, there is no drama with Migos. And I don't know why this is a thing. And Jesse went so far as to say that HuffPost Queer Voices editor didn't want to take her side of the story because they wanted the juicy story.
We're seeing kind of like an open sourcing of journalism that is happening, and it's been happening now for 10, 20 years, right? Since the internet, and anyone can have a site and put up their opinion and say that things happened and put them out there as facts, and they look really reputable. Facts are not being vetted. People just kind of run to be the first, not always running to check out if stuff is right. I can't cape for them because we know they're homophobic. Right?
Right.
So that's why this story had legs.
Of course. And if for those of you for those of you who haven't listened to that episode where we talked about their homophobia, specifically what happened was I Love Mekonnen and Migos, both groups from Atlanta. I Love Mekonnen came out as gay in January, and Migos, a rap group, was asked about this in an interview. And in the interview, they said it was proof that the world is fucked up. There was a little bit of a backpedal, but not for real, for real. Okay.
Right. They totally strike me as fuckboys. I'm sorry.
Of course they're fuckboys. Like,
you know, Migos is everything that is right and wrong. It's complicated. So I can't.
Yeah. Well, in positive news this week, Chance the Rapper is always a source of positivity these days. Chance the Rapper and Jamila Woods have put out a call to Chicago students to create their next music video. They have a song called LSD, and they've asked high school students who, you know, are maybe even students of the camera. They've asked them to put out a video treatment, and I think they have to turn it in by June the 2nd, I believe. And they're actually going to choose someone from those submissions to shadow Vincent Martel and Sam Bailey, the directors behind Jamila Woods' Holy video.
Well, you know, this is great because myself, I'm also a student in the Chicago public schools on the side. So okay. I will be sitting on skin.
I'm pretty sure after finishing college, it's not really possible to go back to high school.
There were some things I needed to reinforce.
Okay.
So it's a 21 Jump Street type situation. I'm in there. I'm trying to infiltrate.
And in other amazing news, oh my gosh. So this is for me, this is really a show. And we've continued to have them over the last few years. But this is a real show of the power of being connected by the web. For whatever reason, just this year, a meme of Rihanna and Lupita Nyong'o sitting together in the front row of a Miu Miu fashion show in Paris. That picture was taken, by the way, in 2014 already. But for whatever reason, this year, a meme went viral. A Twitter user at 1800SadGal was like, yo, can we get that into a movie directed by Ava DuVernay? In her tweet, she says, I'm assuming it's a she, I apologize. They say, Rihanna looks like she scams rich white men, and Lupita is the computer smart best friend that helps plan the scans. Apparently in very aggressive negotiations at Cannes Film Festival, Netflix has won the rights with Ava on board, Rihanna on board, Lupita on board.
Yes, Lord.
And Issa Rae in talks about writing the screenplay.
Now, does this Twitter user get compensation for the concept? Because, you know, that's a thing. Like, if I, like, rolled up in a boardroom in Hollywood and said, hey, and pitched an idea, I'd be compensated for my idea. So I'm interested to see how that went, because I don't really know of any other ideas that have been pitched on social media that made it into the real world like this. So do you know?
So that is the question that everyone is asking. And I have found no answers thus far on the web. Netflix is completely mum about the negotiations, how it went down. They have no comment at this time.
I'm sure people.
And it's also unclear as to if Issa will stick to that plot.
Oh, so she might be doing.
It might not be that plot. So because no one is talking about it, we don't know.
Girl, because they get petty in their world about it. I remember when Keisha Knight Pullen was suing The View, like, well, I had an idea that was somehow adjacent to The View. And, you know, like, if it just had, like, 2 out of 10 characteristics, like, she was coming for next. Absolutely. You understand?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. If they stick with that plot, I feel like there has to be some form, because it's copyright. Copyright is initiated in the moment that you have the idea, in the moment that you, you know,
publish the idea.
No, in the moment that you have it. In the moment that you have the idea and you have somehow put it in the universe, whether that's written or spoken, you own the copyright. That is copyright law universally. We'll see. There will be a lot of talk about that because obviously it's going to be a hit. It could even be bad.
Yeah.
And it's still going to be a hit. So, because everyone is going to want to go see it.
I'm going to need this Twitter user to get a little bit of coins. I'm going to need that to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I feel like, especially Black Twitter, put so much goodness into the universe. I mean, I almost feel like there would be no BuzzFeed if it wasn't for Black Twitter. All they do all day long is mine ideas that originated on Black Twitter and turn them into articles. It's really whack.
It is really whack, actually. But I'm not a BuzzFeed fan, to be honest. So I do, you know, I look at some of their stuff.
A lot of people are.
Or maybe it's even Joanne the Scammer. Because Joanne the Scammer has already put this out, by the way. I just would like to say that. Joanne the Scammer did like a true little video, little mini movie, where she is scamming and doing like a Thelma and Louise. It's very cute. We're excited about it.
Yeah, but instead of having a computer genius, she just had muscle.
Yeah, she had muscle.
The woman was scamming and she had muscle. Okay, well, congratulations, Lupita. Congratulations, Rihanna. I feel like they are just BFF goals. I don't even know. Like, every time I see them together, just the level of support and love that I see flow through them. And I think one of the reasons why people love their relationship so much is because their brands are so different.
Mm-hmm.
You would never think that a Lupita brand would be near a Rihanna brand, but they clearly give absolutely no fucks. So, you know, the interpersonal relationship is just what it is. I love it.
I love it too. And I think Rihanna, see, this is why I ride or die for Rihanna, because she's very different from a lot of the other people who will go unnamed in this moment. Like, I can't imagine that all of them would respond on Twitter and be like, yes. Like, you know, no questions asked. No, let's talk about it. No, you know, if the contracts come together, if the coins come together. It was just like they were both like, yes, I'm down. And then Ava was like, yes, I'm down. I don't think you could say that about all of the folks out there. But
I also love this because since Lupita got her acclaim with 12 Years a Slave, I feel like she's been curating her roles really carefully. Mm-hmm. And I want to see her everywhere, mm-hmm. is the issue.
I'm looking forward to seeing her in Black Panther.
Oh, yes. You know this. But, I mean, like, why we have to wait, like, 2 more years to see her in another major? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But, you know, with the curation, the thing is, it's a tightrope in Hollywood, right? You get a script like 12 Years a Slave, you know that everything about the film is made for the Oscars. The script is made for the Oscars. The time they plan on putting it out is made so that it's in the Oscar competition. You know, every aspect of it is, we want them Oscars, right? So your agent says to you, this, you got to take this. I know it's ugly. I know it's the same story. But this is your chance. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't get the Oscar, you get the Oscar nom. And then you can, and then you have the opportunity to curate. But you got to get there first. Who was checking for Taraji before Benjamin Button, other than the Black people? Nobody knew her. It wasn't until she was nominated for playing Benjamin Button's mother. Then people knew who Taraji P. Henson was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she got $5 for playing that role. So I'm glad she got something out of it. She got a gift certificate to Hardee's for playing. So I'm glad she got something out of it. Love me some Taraji.
In our second segment, I would hope that this, okay, we'll have to see how we contain the conversation, because there's a lot that I'd like to talk about. But everybody was really excited this week specifically. I'm not sure why, because things come out at once. But anyway, this week specifically, there was a lot of talk around the Thanksgiving episode of Masters of None. So a lot of people have told me that I need to watch Master of None. It is a Netflix original series starring Aziz Ansari and Lena Waithe, who I love. And Lena Waithe she's been around, what, for both seasons, but she's only been in about half of the episodes. Obviously, Aziz is in, like, all of the episodes. And a lot of people have told me I should watch it, and I've been kind of skeptical, because I do know that Aziz can allow his anti-Blackness to shine through. And, you know, as a comedian, that's a lot of his stand-up. But the Thanksgiving episode in particular seemed to resonate with the Black community, because in that episode, they go through several years of Thanksgiving tradition at the Lena Waithe household. Lena Waithe, her character's name is Denise. Denise's mother is played by Angela Bassett, and she plays it to a T, because it's Angela Bassett. And in this episode, Denise comes out to her friend Dev, who is Aziz Ansari's character, and eventually comes out to her mother, and then even brings girlfriends home for Thanksgiving. So there's so much to unpack. Where do you want to begin?
First, I want to unpack Master of None in general.
Okay, go for it.
So Master of None was hailed as a breakthrough moment, because you have Aziz Ansari, who is one of the very few Indian comedians of acclaim, Indian Americans, I should say, comedians of acclaim, and, you know, came up through the come up and was able to get the series off the ground. In the second season, one of the reasons why this shines as the best episode is because it's actually a departure. Not to say that Aziz isn't funny. He is funny at times, but the acting, like, she is one of the best actors on staff that he has. Mm-hmm. The acting that Aziz puts forward is oftentimes canned and wooden. Mm-hmm. He's not, like, the best actor. It's hard. You know, he's trying to do a lot of things. He's trying to write. He's trying to have his Jerry Seinfeld moment, so to speak. And sometimes it just doesn't come through. And then he also has a best friend who is, like, the epitome of a fuckboy. So a lot of previous episodes and even episodes after this episode just deal with this, like, hetero cis boy fuckboy drama, where he goes to the wedding of an ex and then flexes on the ex, talking about, but you're supposed to be mine, you know, like, it's just crazy. You'd be like, whoa, like, Aziz, like, you never gonna check this white boy, like, never. And Aziz is just there like, yo, slow down, big guy.
No.
So it's, yes, that is happening in Masters of None at times. Mm-hmm. So the way that this is a departure is that the acting is different. The writing is totally different.
Well, Lena Waithe wrote the episode. That should
exactly.
be
exactly. Mm-hmm. So you just like, is this even, you know, the only thing that makes it cohesive part of Master of None is that Aziz in it. But you can tell you can tell that he really took a back seat and let her shine on this, which is great because I really think that she needs her own joint. This is what that episode showed for me, was that she can handle her own series. She can be doing her own chewing gum.
Well, that's all in the works.
Let's hope so. Now, the way that she fleshed out this whole come out story in a Black family, it was a very typical come out story. It kind of paralleled my own come out story, wherein there's all this noise about Black people being exceptionally homophobic. And we know that's not true. The statistics don't hold up to that. So coming out in a Black family is like coming out in any family. I think it probably may have been more difficult for some white people to come out than for some Black people to come out. One of the reasons why is because in Black communities, we are loath to throw people away. We don't want to throw people away. You know, there's so many reasons why, you know, a member of your family could be just summarily erased at the moment's notice. So for us to now say, okay, we're going to throw you away as well, when this family unit is so important for so many reasons. I don't know many Black families that would do that as homophobic as they are. They'd be like, you come in and they be homophobic and say stuff, but then you still come in. You know what I mean? So it was really awesome that was just never on a table, never an option of like casting her out. Because I think that happens a lot. I think it might be different for the men that come out. So we'll see, but I loved it. It really touched me in so many ways. Her girlfriend was fire. I'm in love with her girlfriend on the show. Oh my gosh. Right. All of
nipples and toes. 40.
Not the nipples and toes.
Is it nipples in toes or with
that,
the nipples?
You know what? Is he so wrong? Because I feel like he would do that in real life. You have a friend, like, you know, they will do that stuff. Like, call, is it nipples and toes? Like, how do you spell it, though? Is it ampersand?
No, I don't want her. I want Michelle.
Yeah, I want Michelle. No, you can have nipples and toes. I get Michelle.
No, so this particular episode came about just when Lena was meeting with Aziz and Alan. Alan is one of the co-creators. And I think she was hoping that Denise would have a girlfriend in the new season. And she was, you know, also being sensitive to the fact that Aziz might not want that. And it just came about organically. He asked her what her coming out was like, what was the process. And in conversation, she was explaining, you know, that she lived in a household of different generations with her grandmother and her mom and her aunt and her sister. And Aziz was pretty fascinated by the story and said, why don't we tell it? And then he just, you know, gave it over to her. So that's a great aspect of it, to know that he can just sit down when he needs to sit down. But I did, like, there were elements of it that I just thought were so great, like just to see brought to life, like the conversation around the O.J. Simpson trial, the conversation around Sandra Bland's death, and the commentary that comes with that. However, I did ask myself, obviously, this is her coming out story, right? So there can't be anything validated or not validated. It's valid because it's her story, mm-hmm. even though it's been somewhat fictionalized. But I did mm-hmm. ask myself, where does it come from that it continually is claimed that we don't talk about gayness? Because that's what specifically what Denise says. Her character is name is Denise, just not to confuse the users. I'm not talking about my partner in organizing. That's what Lena Waithe's character Denise says, you know, she can't tell her mom. And then when she does come out to her mom, who acts shocked? And I'm like, how, Sway, can you be shocked by the person who never wore a dress? You know, and even the way the conversation goes, you can see that mom actually wants, mom is not new to this because she even very cautiously asked, well, have you slept with a man? Before Lena Waithe's character comes out specifically and says, you know, I'm gay. Well, have you slept with a man? How do you know you don't want to sleep with a man if you haven't slept with a man? So mom wasn't completely oblivious to the fact. But I just wonder, is that really the case? Is it really the case that we don't talk about sex and things? Is that specific to the Black experience?
I think in some households, we don't. I grew up in a really religious household, so I'm a product of abstinence-only education. So it wasn't just that we weren't talking about queerness. We weren't talking about heterosex either.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant people were just on their own to navigate that. And it was a touchy subject. It was a subject that I don't even really think our parents fully articulated to themselves. There was a lot that they didn't know about it. They grew up in a STI-free world, essentially, comparatively, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the case of my parents, they were together their entire lives, their entire reproductive lives with one partner. I mean, like, that's something that is real new
mm-hmm.
for us. Like, we generally are not dealing with that in our generation, this period of exploration, this idea of renouncing a purity notion for women specifically, that we need to remain virginal as much as possible. And there's also this notion of respect that we have in Black families that I think is good and bad in some ways, that there's certain things we would never say to our parents,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, we would never be like, shut up, Ma, right? And also, we would never, and Aziz touches on this in his Indian family too, where, you know, he eats pork, but his parents, who don't for religious reasons, and his father explains to him, it's not the fact that you eat pork, do what you want to do, be a good person. But like, do you have to eat the pork in front of your mama? Do
right.
you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. almost like, you can smoke weed, but are you going to smoke weed in front of your mama? The problem becomes in sort of making your sexuality a vice. Heterosexuality is something that's celebrated. It's something like, ooh, you finally got you a good girl or a good partner or this and that. And it's celebrated when people bring that partner home. And queerness in general, whether it's a different gender expression or a sexuality expression outside of heterosexuality, is considered almost like, oh my God, like a vice. And there's a shame element to it that is hard to disentangle from, gosh, you're already Black, you're already possibly a woman, and I don't want your life to be harder.
Well, you know, that's what the mother character says, played by Angela Bassett, right? She says, you're already a Black woman. Do you really have to make your life even more difficult? And there is a sentiment to that that I get. I mean, I don't have kids, but if I had a child, the child was like, yo, Mom, I'm gay, I might be like, why do you have to make your life hard?
You know, this. What's interesting is that this comes out, you know, and on another Netflix series called 13 Reasons. There's an Asian child that is raised by two dads, a gay couple, who has so much internalized homophobia that she will go through any lengths to not come out herself. So this happens even in queer families,
right?
That, you know, none of us are immune from the homophobia of society.
Exactly. And I think, so I loved this episode. Let me be really clear. I love this episode. I think it's great. I think it hits all the beats. I think it's well written. I think it's well played. I absolutely love the episode. I just wonder sometimes when these types of episodes come out and get, you know, all of this love for, you know, many reasons. Obviously, the conversations at the Thanksgiving table are very specific to Black American family culture and the conversations and how they're had, right? Or even like the little running commentary when Mom comes into the room and sees all the clothes on the floor and is like, I'm going to give these clothes to Goodwill. Find somebody who appreciates them, right? All of those things are things that you have either heard out of your own mother's mouth or by association through your auntie or your neighbor's mama. You've heard it and it's great. And that's what makes the episode amazing. At the same time, though, I wonder the part about being afraid to come out and the part about how the parent will react is made to be specifically Black. Now, I understand that Lena Waithe's character, Denise, says when she's young and comes out to her friend Dev, you know, we don't talk about this. And because he even says, but there are white people who do get that same response. He specifically mm-hmm. says that. And she says, yeah, but, you know, in Black families, it's different because the kids are trophies and da 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 da. Well, I get that that is the child trying to process what their experience has been. I find it problematic that those elements are seen as specific to Blacks because they aren't.
Well, Aziz also points that out. He was like, I'm Indian. What you talking about trophiness? Right? Like, if you want to talk about being a trophy, I think we got you beat. I don't know. But so, yeah, I mean, it's not just Blacks that have that level of pressure from their parents in terms of being a trophy. We know that. But we see it also, I think there's this element of not only that happens within your family, but when you're Black, because there are so many prevailing negative stereotypes about Black people in the dominant culture. Mm-hmm. You see it as part of your Black responsibility. And that's heavy, mm-hmm. right? Like, almost like the cost of being on the planet is Black excellence, if you can achieve it. No, seriously, like, if you have the potential, like, don't be gifted and talented in a Black community. You will have people putting the weight of the world on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. I mean, I lived that. And it's rough. You definitely feel like that you have a charge that is a historical charge. It's an epic charge. Like, you want some Greek tragedy stuff, right? Like, you got to keep the torch alive. So it's even deeper than just the familial moment. It's this larger Black family, this Black community moment of having to sort of represent Blackness on this larger level. I don't really think that white kids feel that. So even if they feel that within their family or within their religion, they don't feel that as a white person, I have to represent whiteness in a particular way because there's so many negative stereotypes about whiteness. That's not happening.
In our final segment, what are we looking forward to? What are we excited about it? What are you excited about?
So you first. I've just been talking a bunch.
Oh, goodness. So I can't say who yet, but I am very excited about the month of June because I have lined up some amazing people to talk to for Pride, even though Black Pride isn't going to be celebrated in June, but that is besides the point. I don't know what this move has been with Berlin and London moving Pride back, so I won't actually be celebrating Pride in June. But hey, what can you do? And this weekend is what we call a bank holiday weekend in London, in England, in the UK. And there is a very long running party called Bootylicious. That is
good times. Good times.
And I went to the last Bootylicious. It was the first time I had gone to Bootylicious in like years. And I went to the last one. I was not impressed. But this one is looking to be like it might kind of be dope. They have some really good DJs. And I can go for free because somebody I'm close to celebrated a birthday. And people who've had their birthday within 2 weeks of the party go free with as many friends as they want. I was like, ooh. Are the organizers Black? Because do they understand? The entourage system is real. So I'm looking forward to just letting loose, cutting a rug, you know, the good stuff, the simple stuff. And on top of that, Wonder Woman comes out next week. Boom.
Oh, that's nice.
Boom.
That's nice.
What about you? What's going on with you?
Hey, you know, so it is festival season. I've talked about this before. So we have a massive festival that is kind of like an art festival. It's not kind of like art festival. It really is an art festival. It's called Wiener Festival that is happening here. I myself am not so cultured. So excuse my takeaways from the Wiener Festival. I have already gone there. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. They have an amazing massive warehouse space with at least six offshoot spaces, where you have these big rooms where you can have lectures or installations, performance art. There has been a queer, the House of Realness came through and they did a whole performance, voguing, you name it, session. Mm-hmm. It was great. My favorite thing thus far has been, you know, the nerdiest thing, which is it was this guy giving the best lecture ever on colonialism in Asia, specifically mm-hmm. in Singapore. And relating that to the whole world, and as any good lecture related it to all manner of things. So things that are coming up for Wiener Festival include Hamamness Gender Jihad, going to be interesting. So they have inside of this warehouse, they have constructed an actual hemam. So they have some things going on there. If you would like to participate and be a part of that, they have a performance coming up called All the Sex I've Ever Had, which just sounds amazing. This weekend, we're having the Blackout Cookout. So very excited about that in Vienna.
Well, I'm going to say one thing that I'm not excited about to end us on. Netflix is canceled to Get Down. So I don't know if you heard about it.
I heard about it. I was wondering if you was going to mention it.
It has been canceled. It was, you know, it was very expensive to create.
I bet.
It was $120 million.
Ouch.
And that's not simply because a lot of people were like, oh, well, you know, actors and music rights. Yes, but also they had a lot of production delays and that costs a lot of money. Netflix hasn't given a reason for why they've decided not to continue. Luhrmann had already spoken openly about writing the second season. So it probably has also been a surprise to not only us. So that was disappointing news coming out this week.
It was disappointing. At the same time, I don't think Netflix is the right venue for The Get Down.
I do. I think it was great. I don't want to see The Get Down on BET. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, take a moment to donate. Our website, patreon.com/queertruth. Until next time, peace out.